Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, taking you behind the scenes with the biggest stars of the hottest shows on Broadway and beyond. I'm your host, Variety's theater editor, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Chris Evans. You know him best as Captain America in 7 years' worth of Marvel movies, including Avengers Infinity War, the all-heroes-on-deck epic that hits theaters April 27th. But Broadway audiences are now getting to know him as someone much less likable, but just as vivid, the New York City cop Bill in Kenneth Lonergan's play Lobby Hero, now playing at the newly renovated Helen Hayes Theater. Evans is here to talk with me about his Broadway gig, his childhood stage roles, and his future with or without Captain America. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
How's Broadway treating you?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I feel really, you know, it was a really intimidating thing to try and to do, just because I know it is really it's a very tight-knit community, and I think you really have to earn your stripes to kind of to do it at this level, and I have not. And so you feel a little scared that you won't be accepted, and you're a little concerned that you maybe you're taking a job from someone who's worked really hard to be up on that stage, and you don't want to feel like you're just leaning on your film credits and, you know, cutting the line or something. But at once, I also, you know, I spent my life on a stage.
Yeah, when was the last time you were on stage?
I was 18.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was my I was a theater kid. You know, that's what
right.
I was, you know, so I my year round, you know, you're doing 6-7 shows a year.
Right.
So, I mean, name a show, I've done it. But this is all, you know, as a kid, it's not professional theater. So at once you feel like you're a bit of an imposter, but then it also kind of feels like you're home. So it's tough to kind of reconcile that feeling. But luckily, it's been really nice, and everyone has been very welcoming. And you know, it really forces you to work hard in a different way and focus all your efforts and really make sure you respect what you're doing and respect the process and respect that you don't know this craft at this level and try to learn as much as you can along the way. And like I said, it's really been great.
A lot of people find the eight shows a week schedule sort of an adjustment. Have you found that?
Yes.
Why?
it's a challenge. You know, everyone keeps saying, well, you'll start sinking into it and it'll start becoming old hat. But each show feels like the first show to me still. You know, you get nerves and, you know, you really want to make sure. You never want to phone anything in, you know. I've heard a lot of other people on Broadway say that after a while it does start to become like a machine, but I'm waiting for that feeling because I still just, you know, it truly feels like the first time every time.
I also, my impression is working on giant Marvel films as often as you do, and then there's all the press that goes with them, like that seems all-consuming in a different way. Is that right? Like, is this equally all-consuming, and in what ways are they different?
It's different in the sense that it's, you know, the Marvel stuff, if you're actually making a film, you have, you know, plenty of opportunity to try different things and they'll pick the best version of it. So, you know, it's liberating in the sense that you can really afford to make mistakes. It's scary that you don't have as much control as you may have on the stage. The difference with the other main difference is that the work in film will live on. You know, that's not going anywhere. Theater, you know, it's just you and whoever's in the house that night, and you're just kind of putting on this little production. And, you know, Robert Altman had a quote. He was talking about film when he said it, but it's far more applicable to theater. Something having to do with building sandcastles every night, and you're just letting the ocean take it away, and then you're going to build another one tomorrow.
And that's more theater than film.
Incredibly. Huh? But he was talking about it in reference to film, which I thought was strange, because the sandcastle doesn't go away with film. It stays. You're building a building. No, with theater, it really is just like a little sandcastle, and it's just for you and for the people who are there to see it, and then it's over. It's gone. It's you know, it's just wiped away. So it's, again, that's liberating in a way, but also a little scary because you kind of have one shot. If you lose mental focus or something, you can't just kind of say, give me another take. You really have to stay in a certain frame of mind for an extended period of time, which, again, it's a different muscle and it's exciting to stretch it, but it can be a little exhausting.
I understand that you were actively looking for a play to do when this show came to you. Why was that? Why was it a thing you wanted to get back to?
I missed it, I think. You know, I think I had become a little, you know, the process of film is it varies from film to film. Sometimes you get rehearsal, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you create deep bonds with your fellow actors, sometimes you don't. And, you know, sometimes there's a lot of discussion about character and prep, and sometimes there isn't. And I think I missed the feeling of kind of rehearsal. You know, when I was a kid doing theater, it's you know, over a month of just rehearsal. By the time you get to getting the character on its feet, you know it inside out and upside down. And I missed that kind of preparation. I missed that kind of camaraderie, and I missed that excitement. And like I said, I just wanted to stretch a new muscle. I wanted to kind of try something, you know, to still do what I do for a living, to still lose yourself in a character, but just in a different way. It was exciting.
Right. And Trip Cullman, the director, sent the script to you initially. Yeah, did you know him, or how did the?
I don't know if Trip sent it. My agent sent it to me. Maybe Trip sent it to them. But
got
yeah, because
okay.
Like I had told my team maybe 5-6 years ago that I wanted to do a play, and so you know,
how'd that go over?
They were happy about it. They have other clients who do that. You know, it depends when you want to do it. If you come off of a big movie and you got a lot of offers coming in, they may not be too thrilled to take yourself out of the running. But they knew that was in my background, and so they weren't going to talk me out of it. But there's a finite amount of theater that happens. It's not exactly the type of thing where you can just go get something on its feet, just find some producers, find some funding, and make a movie. There's only so many houses and only so many reputable places that you want to kind of have your debut or whatever. So they would send me what was available at any given time, and it just never was quite right. And like I said, it was my first time doing it, and you want to make sure it's something that really means something to you and it's something that you really think you can do well. And a year ago, they sent me something that Tripp was directing called The Layover that he did end up directing. It did happen.
Yeah.
And I read it, and I thought it was good. It just, you know, and I spoke with Tripp at length about it, and it was good. It just, like I said, it just wasn't 100%. Like if you're not waking up in the morning and thinking about a project, that's when you're doing a disservice to the material and probably taking a job from someone who probably would wake up and think about it and probably just do a better job than you just because of that. So it ultimately, you know, I backed out of it. But then this one came along last year, and as soon as I read it, I read it once. Normally I read something 3 or 4 times before you commit, but I read this once and I was just like, I'm in.
Why?
Because it was, you know, I was unbelievably prescient, you know, given, I mean, and this was...
This play was written, we should say, I saw the original production in 2001.
Yeah, yeah. So, he wrote it in 1999, so yeah. 19 years ago. It was an incredibly long time ago for topics that are still so relevant today. It's an incredibly entertaining read. I love Kenny's writing. I think it really, it serves actors.
This is Kenneth Lonergan, the player, right?
Yep. It serves actors incredibly well. But I like the fact that I got to play someone who is, you know, not a good man.
He's charitably a real creep, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He's
yeah. I typically don't play guys like that. And I just thought it was exciting to try and stretch that way.
And have you found it freeing and as exciting as you hoped it would be?
Yeah, it's great. It's a little, you know, it starts to weigh you down. You know, you're doing it every day and you really have to stay in this kind of strange headspace. I mean, he doesn't walk around thinking he's a creep. So, I mean, there's that.
Right?
No, very few villains think they're the villain. So, I mean, he's that's the redeeming quality, and that's what you really want to try and emphasize, because if he's just a perfunctory villain, then there's no dimension to him. So you really want to try and make sure that you see him with sympathetic eyes, at least at certain parts of the play.
What was your way into his character, into your
well,
the thing that humanizes him for you?
I mean, I hate to say it, but I know a lot of guys just like him. You know what I mean? I grew up in Boston where there's a lot of, you know, and not to say when I say guys like him, I shouldn't say guys that are, you know, misogynist or you know, part of the patriarchy in all its negative forms, but men who are just very confident, who perhaps inject their opinion where no one asked for it and are a little unaware that it's not their time to have a voice or to offer an opinion. And their heart's in the right place, but it's just a life soaked in privilege that they can't recognize. And so, you know, you mix that with the braggadocious, you know, temerity of a cop. And I know guys like that too. You know, I come from a very Italian family, so there's a lot of gesticulating and loud voices and just confidence. And so, you know, you mix all that together and you start thinking, I think I know how to play this guy. I think I can do some fun stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like Bill, right?
Yeah.
There, Kenny Lonergan gives you some monologues as a playwright, right?
Yeah, like, that's like all my stuff is.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's not a thing that ever happens really in movies, much less Marvel movies in particular,
true,
right?
Very like, true, yeah.
What, how are you enjoying those kind of arias of...
Yeah, they're great. I mean, it's the one thing I've had to learn is kind of... When you fall out of listening, you start realizing...
To other people or to yourself?
To just listening. When I say listen, I just mean being present. Like when you start becoming aware of what you're doing and you slip out of the moment, you become very aware of when you need to swallow your spit. Like it's a real sign for me when I'm having a bad night that I choke a little on my own spit. That sounds so strange to say. But, you know, my guy has a real thick New York accent and there's a lot of words and diction's so important in the theater. And, you know, he really gets cooking. And when you're in those moments in life, you're not thinking about when you have to, like, you know, lick your lips or swallow. It's just happening, you know, authentically, naturally. The times when, you know, during rehearsal or something, if I could feel myself being a little too self-aware, I would just start being like, oh my God, I have a lot of saliva in my mouth right now. It's a strange thing to kind of become aware of.
And then how do you get yourself out of it?
You swallow. I don't know. I guess I don't know. I mean, you have to let it be a part of something. And that's another thing, almost like that's another thing I've kind of learned during this stretch is even when – you know, we were in rehearsal, I became so scared of those pockets, so scared of flubbing lines, so scared of little moments that would betray some sort of truth or expose yourself to the audience as a performer. But in a way, those little moments, I don't know, they almost empower you because it's like an opportunity to get back on the horse. You know, if you slip out for a second, all is not lost. The another skill you have to kind of sharpen, I guess, is understanding if you slip up, you got to stand right back up and jump right back in. And it's almost empowering to do that, to know that you can, even in a moment where you kind of trip, you can just, you know, fall right back in line. And it really fills you with a sense of confidence that no matter what happens, I got my hand on the wheel.
One of your co-stars in this is Michael Cera, who I had forgotten you had worked with on Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah. Did you get to know him much during that?
Yeah, that was one of those few movies where the cast bonds so wonderfully. It was a lot of young people, and Edgar Wright's such a wonderful director and a really fun film. So everyone really got along phenomenally well on that one.
And did that then affect the rehearsal process and play into your...
There wasn't as much...
Did you feel
much...
a comfort there? Or... Sorry, go ahead.
No, meaning did that affect the rehearsal process for the play?
Yeah, or like did it give you some comfort going in that you'd work with one of the...
Well, I was happy that I knew him, and I was happy that I knew he could do the role. You know, you know for a fact that he's going to really, really... really excel. I mean, this part is perfect for him, and so it certainly made me happy to know that our anchor for the show was going to do his job phenomenally well. That's comforting.
Yeah. You mentioned that Love a Hero touches on a lot of issues that seem surprisingly resonant today for a play that was written so long ago. I mean, you know, more than 15 years ago,
sure.
From police brutality and sexual harassment. Do you find that influences the reaction in the room to the audience, by the audience? Is there...
Oh, yeah. I guess I can't say in comparison because I didn't see it before this last year with all this with all these things coming to light. But you can certainly feel the, you know, the audience is vocal, the audience is invested, and you know Belle has a lot of moments where
this is Belle Powley. He's also in it with Brian Tyree Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Tyree Henry.
Okay. Where she's just kind of when she stands up to me, when she kind of punches back, and you really feel the enthusiasm from the audience, and it's a strange thing to know that if the more they dislike me, the better I'm doing my job.
You've alluded a little bit to this already, but we spoke back when Labra Hero opened. We talked a little bit about your past on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about that. How'd you get into the stage? Your mother was a performer?
Well, my mother was a tap dancer. I don't know that she did much theater, but my older sister was the one who kind of led the way for us. She started doing plays when she was maybe, you know, 12 or something like that.
How many of you are there? Kids?
Well, I'm one of four.
Okay.
And so, yeah, Carly started. And we went to maybe two of her shows. And by the third show, she did a couple shows at a couple different youth theaters. And eventually we all just kind of like, man, this looks so fun. She's getting flowers and candy and opening night. And she misses like a couple days of school, like school time performing. This is great. So me and my brother jumped on board. My youngest sister was still a little too young. And we just loved it. And then, you know, a couple of years later, my younger sister jumps on board. And then all four of us, just year round, we're doing truly, you know, between 5 and 7 shows each.
Yeah. And what'd you do?
Which shows?
Yeah. What are your favorites?
Oh, man. I really enjoyed Into the Woods. I liked West Side Story. And
you were Into the Woods was
Jack. Yeah. Yep. And West Side Story was Action. And Music Man was Harold Hell.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was a fun one. What else? I mean, Pirates of Penzance.
These are all very musical heavy. These are...
Yeah. Well, that's
actually... Are you a singer?
Well, I think you have no choice when you're that age doing musicals. You know, you can... I can carry a tune, but that is one thing I will never... I'd never do a Broadway show.
Your next Broadway outing is not Harold Hill in the revival of the Music Man. Okay?
That's actually a bit of an easier show, musical.
An easier saying.
I'll never be Marius in Les Mis.
Okay.
That'll never happen. That would be a tragedy for everybody.
Yeah. And... You mentioned tap dancing, and you tap dance yourself now. You've taken it off, yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was another thing we grew up doing. My mother was a tap dancer, so we had a tap floor in our basement, so we all got lessons and stuff like that.
Right.
And I just like it. I just think it's a cool thing. While I was here, I just started taking classes again.
And are you finding – does that in any way affect your sort of mindset coming onto the stage?
Not really. I think exercise is good. It gets your endorphins going. Yeah. So, I mean, whether I'm on, you know, whether I got my tap shoes on or if I'm on a treadmill, you know, anything to get your heart rate going.
Right, right. So I'm a little disappointed that the next show from you is not going to be a musical, but that's okay. I live. That's fine. So we should talk about the fact that Infinity War is coming out any minute now. What can you tell us about it?
God, I don't know.
Not zero much. Things, yeah, I'm guessing,
no,
right?
That's the problem. I mean, they've only become more secretive with every with every movie. I mean, they you had to truly argue with them to give you a script. They didn't want to give out scripts to anybody. So nervous about it being leaked. I can't say much, but there's a lot of people in it.
There's a lot of people
in
it,
right?
Yeah. Right. And so you're in this one, and then you're in the follow-up that comes out next year. Mm-hmm. And then is that it for you for Captain America?
After the follow-up one, after Avengers 4, that's the last of my contract. You know, my initial contract with them is up, yeah.
And why? What are you? How interested are you in pursuing further Captain America roles?
I don't know. Tough to say. I mean, it's been so lovely doing it. I don't know. I mean, part of you kind of realizes that it's going to be a hard thing to let go of, and you know, for almost 9 years, 10 years now, it's just always been around the corner, and you kind of get lulled into a sense of security that it'll always be there. But part of you almost kind of thinks, well, if we end on the right note, and I think it really kind of does, like the scripts they have are really beautiful and really well written.
You filmed the follow-up already.
Yeah, we did.
Done with that portion of it.
All of the movies are in the can. You know, we filmed 3 and 4 kind of simultaneously.
Right.
And they do such a good job. It's really sweet and lovely and just special. And everyone really has a nice, tight plot, little story arc. And I don't know. Part of you almost doesn't want to mess that up. But you never know. I mean, I don't think Marvel could mess it up if they tried. I guess it depends. It's hard to know where your head's going to be at in a few years.
Yeah. And there's always would you have any interest in something like what Hugh Jackman did with Logan, or like right, the Deadpool movies, like do something kind of a shift away. Well, but that's still that's vein, right?
You know, he's the one you would reference in saying that it can work. You know, like he's made like 47 of those movies, right. And they just keep getting better. I think, you know, so he's I don't know. Yeah, it's tough to know. It's tough to know now how I'll feel in a few years.
And so, when you think about life outside of Captain America, what does life look like? Does it look like this, what you're doing right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, theater is the thing that I really didn't know that I needed. I had a hunch, but now after doing this, it's been so rewarding in so many ways. But again, it's still going to have to be something that I connect to in a real deep way. But you know, as soon as this is over, I will be on the hunt for the next play. It's just got to be the right one. I don't know. I think I'm also a big fan of downtime. I mean, who isn't?
Well, you haven't had a whole lot of it however many years.
In the last couple years specifically, yeah. It's been a lot of work. And you know, I just I like taking my foot off the gas from time to time and just kind of living and just being and just going home and being around my family. And, you know, I like getting the desire, the hunger to work. I don't want to work just because I'm a workaholic or restless or antsy or fearful or something. I don't believe in momentum. You know, I want to work because, you know, the same way when you're a kid on a Saturday and you wake up and you just want to build a fort. It's not for anything. You just do it because it's what you want to do the second your eyes open up. I don't want to make work just because I feel like there's something that, you know, I want to do it just because it's what my creative, you know, appetite is looking for.
Right. And I know you're attached to Jekyll, yeah? Right. But well, do you have a sense, does that relate to kind of the kind of film roles you're interested in pursuing in the future?
You know, being attached to movies like that, those are pretty lucid. I mean, you know, it's just you read a script and you sit down with some people who own the property and you have a good discussion and you say, okay, yeah, let's take the next step, which is, you know, you kind of work on a script and you find a director and you do a lot of polishing. And if any time along the way it doesn't quite work out, you know, the movie might fall apart. But at this stage, yeah, that's something we're both kind of in lockstep with. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
And you directed your first film a few years ago before we go. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're interested in doing again?
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. A lot of learning on that one. You know, it's a daunting task to try and dive into that with no previous directing experience, and some of the things that you think would be the challenges weren't, and then the things that you think would be a piece of cake ended up being some hurdles. So very eye-opening, but I really liked it. I really liked it, and that's another example of needing to find a property, a piece of material that you just love. You know, when I directed Before We Go, it was a little bit of a broken bird script. You know, it was a script that needed a lot of fixing and we tried to mend it as best we could, but it was available and the people who owned it were crazy enough to let me have a shot. And, you know, your first time out of the gate, you're not going to be showered with amazing scripts. And I just think I was just eager to get my feet wet. So now it's the hunt for finding something again that truly means something to me on a deep enough level that you can dedicate, you know, ultimately ends up being like a year of your life towards.
Do you have any urge to write anything ever?
I have an urge to write. I don't have an urge to share it with anybody. That's the scary part. You know, I mean, to some degree, yeah. I mean, maybe not writing original content, but certainly fixing scripts and, you know, rewrites and doctoring pieces. That's always fun, especially when you're working with other actors, you know, and you get their input in terms of, you know, the character they're trying to portray. But yeah, I'm very capricious, you know, by nature, and so every day I wake up and have another endeavor I kind of want to tackle.
Right. And so, as you think about the idea of coming back to Broadway, you said you'll leave this and want to come back.
Yeah.
What's going to get you here?
With Broadway, it really comes down to like all the right pieces. It's got it. You need the right cast. You need the right role. You need the right director. You need the right run. Like sometimes
Sure.
I've got to be honest. I have a couple friends who've done Broadway, and you know they do these giant, you know, 6 month, you know, runs that just seem like, oh, I don't know how you did it. It's unbelievable. I can handle a 16-week run, but beyond that, just seems like, oof. That takes another level of strength and discipline. But
is that the is it the idea of going back and doing the same thing over and over again, or what is it that's most daunting about the
length
of that?
Yeah, it's about trying to find something new every night, you know, especially if – suppose if your character runs the gauntlet of emotions and experiences, it's probably a little bit easier to find access points to surprise you. But, you know, if you've seen this play, my guy's a little binary in his thinking, and there is room for empathy, but still, you know, if I had to play this guy for 6 months, I might start to lose my mind a little.
But whatever it is that brings you here, it seems like you're going to be back.
Yeah, oh yeah, without question.
Great. Well, we can't wait to see what it will be in.
No,
thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks
absolutely.
For chatting.
Yeah,
nice to talk to you.
You got it, man.
Yeah,
likewise. Thanks, man.
That was Chris Evans, who's now on Broadway in Lobby Hero in a limited run that ends May 13th, and soon on the big screen as Captain America in Avengers Infinity War, opening April 27th. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I talk to Lynn Nottage, the two-time winner of the Pulitzer Prize, whose latest play, Malema's Tale, is a multifaceted look at the illegal ivory trade from the point of view of its main character, who is an elephant. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.